karere taku manuki te tāhūhū o te rangi, topa topa ai. Ko muri tai toke rau, ātarangaranga hei hiki i ōna parirau. Tauana ngā kanohi ki te pito o te tiritiki waitangi ki roto o ngā puhi nui tonu. Te kāinga o taku whāia, te ūkai pō. Tere tonu te haere, tainoa ki ngā tai o te uru. Ki te pā o ngā araki, ki te papa i tūria ai. Te teme para i kauhautia ai, e tahu pōtiki wiramurātana, te māngai, te tangata, nāna i hāpai i te tiriti me te paipera ki ōna ringa. Ko rōria hareruia kia i hoa o ngā mano. Matua tama wairua tapu me ngāne hera pono me te māngai, hei tautoko mai ai. Whakawhiti atu i te ikaroa a Māui ki te Waipounamu. Mākere noa ki ngā maunga huka huka o te tonga. Tauana te mata ki ngā taonga i Arahura. Ōku pānga tūpuna. Huri no ki kāpoi, ki murihuki, te ure tārewa. Piki rawa ki te tau ihu o te waka. Kā rongo te ao, kā rongo te pō, tihei mauri ora. E ngā iwi, e ngā reo, e ngā mana, e ngā mātā waka, tēnā koutou katoa. E te kai kōrero o te whare pārama te o Aotearoa, tēnā koe. E rauranga tira mai, e mihi tonu atu ki a koutou e huihui mai nei tātou i tēnei wā. Nō reira, tēnā nō tātou katoa. Mr. Speaker, I join with my colleagues in congratulating you on your reappointment to this 50th Parliament. It is gratifying to be here as the member for Te Tai Tonga, representing the largest electorate in the country, and the many diverse iwi and Māori communities within it. From our capital city to Whanganui Ātara, Wellington, the entire Waka a Māui, the entire South Island, and extending to the outlying islands of Rakiura Stewart Island and Wharekauri Rēkohu Chatham Islands. To the people of Te Tai Tonga, thank you for your tautoko. I wish to acknowledge my predecessor, Rāhui Kātine of the Māori Party, and her work and service to Te Tai Tonga during her term. I extend my heartfelt personal thanks to the many helpers and volunteers in the Labour whānau across Te Tai Tonga for their generous support, in particular my small dedicated team, many of whom are here today. To my new caucus colleagues, I look forward to working with you all and making my contribution as a paddler on the Labour waka. To my tuakana, Parekura, Shane and Anaya, thank you for your support, mentoring and encouragement. To all other members of Parliament from all sides of this House and all Māori members of Parliament, I congratulate you all. My hope is that Māori will see the benefits of our presence here. And finally, to my family, my beautiful children and extended whānau, thank you for your unwavering love and belief in me. I dedicate this occasion of my maiden statement to my late father, Te Rino Tiri Kātini. Mr. Speaker, 80 years ago, in this room, maybe even in this chair, my grandfather, Eruera Tiri Kātini, stood before this House as the MP for Southern Māori. 45 years ago, in this room, maybe even this chair, my aunt, Whetu Tiri Kātini Sullivan, stood before this House as the MP for Southern Māori. Today, I stand before the House as the MP for Te Tai Tonga. At the time my grandfather rose to address the House for the first time, the Māori population numbered a mere 82,000. We were at that time a rural people, still recovering from the ravages of land sales and the scourge of introduced diseases. We existed at the very margin of the country's economy. What income we were able to earn as unskilled casual labourers in the agriculture and forestry industries was supplemented by gardening and foraging. The Land Development Assistance Program introduced by Sir Apiranga Ngata in the 1920s, which eventually gave rise to the Māori incorporations and trusts of today, was in its infancy, and poverty was all pervasive, especially among those communities that had been left landless by confiscation and land sales. Statutory recognition of the Treaty of Waitangi, the claims of Waitahu, Waikato and Taranaki, and poverty were my grandfather's main concerns. As a Ratana independent member of this House, he presented T.W. Ratana's treaty petition and took every opportunity to press for its adoption. He drew attention to Māori unemployment, to the need to remove the discriminatory rates paid to Māori for relief work, pensions and family allowances, and pressed for a Māori housing program. Unfortunately, the treaty petition languished and it would be another 33 years in the time of the third Labor government before his efforts in this area bore fruit. But the issues of discriminatory treatment of Māori in the social assistance area were addressed after the election of the first Labor government, as were Māori housing and education. By the time that my aunt, Whetutiri Katene Sullivan, entered Parliament, the Māori population had grown to 201,000 Māori. Urbanisation had quickened in the intervening years, reaching a peak in the 1950s and early 1960s, and 62% of the population was now living and working in towns and cities. Lack of educational qualifications meant most Māori were employed in unskilled or semi-skilled jobs in factories, freezing works, on the wharves, industries that were sensitive to boom and bust. Nevertheless, the incomes they received were considerably higher than what they might have received had they remained at home in rural areas, and the overall standard of living of Māori improved. Urbanisation, however, was not without its downsides. On the one hand, many Māori found it difficult to adjust, and social problems, now much more visible given the proximity of Māori and Pākehā, began to emerge and grow. And on the other, the retention of Māori culture was being threatened. I understand that Norman Kirk used to refer to urbanisation as a movement as significant to Māori as the Great Migration in terms of distance and socio-cultural impact. And he conceived of that impact from two perspectives, from that of the people who had migrated to the towns and cities and were now in danger of losing their bearings through loss of culture, and from that of their whanaunga left at home and still struggling with the legacies of colonial land laws and practices. It was these issues, those afflicting urban migrants and those afflicting the rural sections of their whānau, that my aunt, Maturata, and the other Māori Labour MPs sought to redress in the shaping and passage of the Treaty of Waitangi Act 1975. It was a watershed moment in the history of our people. Fast forward to my time. In 2011, the Māori population was estimated to be 673,000. The urban component at the time of the last census, 2006, was 84%. With urbanisation has come deeper and deeper integration into New Zealand's economy. In 2006, more than 78,000 Māori were employed as managers, professionals and technicians and trades workers. And for the first time, workers in these occupation groups combined outstripped the number working as plant and machinery operators and labourers. More than 70,000 Māori held a qualification above NCEA Level 3, and more than 45,000 received a personal income of 50,000 or more. In terms of household income, more than one in every two Māori was living in a household with a combined income of more than 50,000, and well over one in every three in a household with a total income of 70,000 or more. What we are witnessing is the steady growth of a Māori middle class. On the collective front, we are witnessing the rise of the Māori economic authorities, Māori land trusts and incorporations, and iwi authorities. It has been my good fortune to have held positions that have enabled me to work either alongside or within some of these organisations, and I've found the experience exhilarating. I began my professional career as a commercial lawyer, but after a few years I transitioned from the law as I wanted to broaden my scope and become involved in the emerging Māori business sector. It was through trade promotion work with Trade New Zealand that I became involved with Māori businesses and Māori exporters, in particular working alongside them in trade development and promotion. I then took up a position with Ngāi Tahu to help in the expansion of its seafood business. All this work has allowed me to become involved in Māori economic networks, such as the Federation of Māori Authorities, and to develop greater awareness of the potential for Māori to continue to improve on the contribution they are already making. The rise of the Māori economic authorities is something that goes largely unnoticed by New Zealanders. Not only are these organisations contributing to national wealth, they also contribute to the economies of their local regions. In some local body districts, Māori authorities are already the largest single employer of labour. And, I might add, not just Māori labour. Many have reached out to Asia and the Pacific, and as they continue to do so, that contribution will become even more significant. In the not-too-distant future, I can see at least five of these authorities breaking the $1 billion mark in their own right, something my forebears could not have dreamed of. And what is more sustainable, sustainable development is not an option for these organisations, since the principles of sustainability are already spelled out for them, either in Māori land law generally or in their enabling legislation. Mr Speaker, there's a saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same. The origin of this saying is thought to be French, but I'm pretty sure it's Māori. Life and prospects for Māori are so much better than they were 80 years ago, but Māori know better than anyone that much remains to be done. We are still overrepresented at the bottom of the wealth pyramid. We will, on average, die sooner than our Pākehā mates. We will, more so than our Pacific cousins, end up in prison, and unlike any other group in Aotearoa in New Zealand, we now receive more in transfer payments than we pay in tax. Too many of us remain locked into a cycle of dependency and poverty. The issue of Māori poverty is exacerbated by the deficit approach to the measurement of our progress and the eagerness of the media to capitalise on Māori failures and to ignore our successes. We have travelled a long way towards socio-economic parity with Pākehā, and we have a fair way to travel yet. Our people are not helped by being constantly framed as a problem to be fixed or by a growing climate of opinion that positions inequality as a signal of market success rather than market failure, that attributes underperformance to rocky economic conditions rather than to the structural settings of our economy, and that maintains it is too costly to change the present, even if a change made now might save the future. For me, Māori development, as Māori conceive of the idea, has always been about enabling Māori to live the life that they want to live by extending the range of opportunities and choices open to them to do so. Mana Māori motuhake, a concept that Pākehā have feared and some Māori have misconstrued, was the term that was used in my grandfather's day. It has little to do with secession, but a lot to do with freedom. Until very recently, for example, Māori had little or no choice about the type of schooling they received or about how their health services should be delivered. It was the mainstream or nothing at all. Today, some, but certainly not all, Māori have a choice between kohanga reo and mainstream at the preschool level, kura kaupapa and mainstream at the school level, wānanga and mainstream at the tertiary level, and Māori or mainstream primary healthcare delivery. Mr Speaker, I stand in awe of the succession of Māori MPs and of Māori leaders from outside of this House who never lost sight of the goal, despite the hardships and frustrations that must have been involved in challenging mindsets and winning majority support for change. Incremental, ad hoc and opportunistic though these initiatives might appear to be, there is no mistaking their direction. Whilst I might differ from them in outlook, priorities and experience, I nevertheless share with them a commitment to the fundamental idea of Māori living the life they want to live, and as well as ensuring that the safety net is set at a high enough level, of working to extend the range of opportunities and choices open to those among us who are falling by the wayside. We are no longer as homogenous as we were in the past. Indeed, increasing diversity and differentiation are the hallmarks of modern Māori society. It is this diversity of ethnic and iwi affiliation, of cultural proficiency, of attachments to the past, of the composition of our households and families, of knowledge and skills, of occupations and incomes, and of values, beliefs and opinions that we as members of this House will be challenged by. It is not our place to tell our people how they should live their lives or to marginalise those who do not fit a prescribed picture of what it is to be Māori. As I see it, our job as elected representatives is to embrace the diversity, to give fair hearing to all interests, and to ensure that the range of views are voiced and weighed fairly when it comes to decision making. This is my commitment I give to my electorate, Māori generally, and to my parliamentary colleagues. Nō reira, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā tātou katoa.